Steve Dale back with you on WGN. Welcome back on a Sunday afternoon, and what a better way to spend a Sunday afternoon than with my friend, Hall of Famer, Foster Hewitt, Hall of Famer. I think I've got that right. Mr. Doc Emmerich. Hello, Doc Emmerich.
Good to talk to you, Steve. Good to be on WGN, first in sound, first in service, first in sports. That was about 60 years ago when I was growing up, listening to the Cubs and all of those other things as a child, and I still listen to the station today.
And in fact, I know that is absolutely true. Personally, I know that that is right. Doc, you wrote a book called Off Mic, How a Kid from Basketball Crazy Indiana Became America's NHL Voice, among other things. And by the way, if you have a question for Doc Emmerich, this show is for you. It's all about you. 312-981-7200. You can call, you can text. Hockey question, a pet question. He might be able to answer one of those.
I think that's more down your line, Steve.
No. Anything at all for Doc Emmerich, where I know that Doc is happy to take your telephone calls. And Doc Emmerich loves chatting with people. He loves chatting with fans. And a part of what you write about in the book, in fact, is growing up, you would listen to, what was it, on WGN radio, it was Lou Boudreau and Quinlan.
Jack Quinlan.
Yeah. And you write about other people who really came before you, you know, and I do believe we stand on the shoulders of those who have come before us and the good things that have happened and how some of these people helped you along the way. I mean, you wouldn't think Doc Emmerich would need help along the way. Well, you got help. I don't know that you needed it. But even having to do with your doctorate degree, which is why we call you Doc, it's not that it's just a nickname. You really are a doctor. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it was a guy named Ernie Harwell who was broadcasting the Tigers at the time. Earlier in his life, had done the New York Giants, had done the Baltimore Orioles, but was the Detroit Tigers announcer. And I was at Bowling Green State University wanting to complete the doctoral degree. I'd done 2 years of coursework, but what I lacked was a dissertation. And so at that time, it wasn't electronic. You had to go into the library and search through the stacks and look at periodicals and go through hardback books and find out all of your citations that you would use that way. But the first thing you had to do was to do a search to make sure that the topic that you were coming up with hadn't been done before, so that you weren't copying or plagiarizing somebody else's idea. And there had not been an historical thing done on Major League Baseball play-by-play announcers. I had no interest in being one of those by that time, since I'd seen hockey live, but I thought it would be interesting to go back because there was such a rich history of baseball announcing. Long before Jack Quinlan, there were games being broadcast on your station and other stations across the country. So I asked Ernie if he would be so nice as to serve as my non-academic advisor. You had to have 5 people with doctorates to sign the front page of your finished work, approving it for the university to award you the degree. But you really needed somebody in the field to kind of walk you through it and also critique the survey that you had prepared as well as the written work. And Ernie said yes. I probably did that for 500 other people that requested his time to do things like that, because that's the kind of soul that he was. But he did that and then completed the writing and sent him a copy of it, and he said some very nice things, and it was completed. And so the very uncreative nickname I've had since that time is Doc, but I do in fact have a PhD degree from Bowling Green. Yeah, long time ago, though, Steve.
Well, I would argue you are the same kind of soul. 312-981-7200. Our first call up is Bill. Bill, you are talking to, I hope he doesn't mind me saying, the legendary Doc Emmerich. Hi, Bill.
Hi, it's an absolute honor to speak with you. I appreciate the time. I have a question for you. Back in 2010, the result of Patrick Kane's shot against the Flyers to win the Stanley Cup was kind of a mystery. Nobody knew if it went in. And we were kind of cheated from a nice, you know, historic championship call. Does stuff like that bother you after the fact?
Enormously. That's the most embarrassing moment I've had in 47 years. I don't know if the other guys who were working for the other networks who had the same problem as I did felt that way. But, yeah, that's it. If anyone asked me my most embarrassing moment, it's the easiest answer to come up with because it is the quickest. That occurred in June of 2010, and I was doing New Jersey Devils games during that period of time and into the next fall. So it was Halloween Day of the next fall, and, of course, this newly minted championship was still fresh in the minds of everyone in Chicago, and it was the Devils' first trip into Chicago. So at the morning practice, after everyone had peeled away from Patrick Kane's dressing stall at United Center, I sat next to him, and I said, "Okay, what did you see?" And he said, "I let the shot go from the left circle, and it disappeared under the goaltender, and as I got closer to the net, I saw it was in the back of the net. I looked at the referee, and he wasn't doing anything. No one else was reacting at all. And I realized then I saw it in the net. No one else was doing anything, and my job at that point was to sell it. So I started throwing my equipment in the air, and I headed to the other end of the ice to our goaltender, and I was selling all the way. Well, some of the Blackhawks at the bench were fearful of coming over the boards because they might be penalized. The referee, the two referees huddled, and there was actually a public address announcement made that the goal is under review. I got the S and the C of score out of my mouth, but then pulled back for reasons unknown to myself or probably anyone else in our truck. Eventually, it was determined by most knowing people after they had seen the puck themselves that it was a goal, but it was not exactly the best one. One other backstory from that. Years before, it was determined that the goal judges who had positions behind the glass, behind the net, were not as good at doing their job as the referees would be. Now, had we had those guys still in position behind the glass, behind the net, he'd have seen that because it was coming right at him, and he'd have turned the light on immediately, and none of us would have boobered it. But as it turned out, they weren't there. There was a goal judge located in the rafters all the way down from where we were located. He was on the end line right at the net. And he had his hand on the button, but he is under orders to not push the button unless the referee points at the net. That never happened. Though he saw the puck from way up there cross the line and go into the net under the goaltender because he was all the way down at that end, he couldn't turn the light on or he would have saved us a lot of misery and embarrassment. Nonetheless, Patrick was having a good laugh about it. He said, "I listened to everybody's call of the goal, and some of them were pretty funny." I said, "Well, mine was probably the funniest of all."
It's not a bad thing to be funny. Thank you for the call, Bill. Well, you know what, though? I'm embarrassed. I don't want to ask you about your most embarrassing moment in all those years, although that's a great story. What is, and this is an impossible question, I'm sure, to answer. And by the way, it is astounding to me how you can remember goal after goal after goal, game after game after game. You write in the book, there was one game in particular after you received your cancer diagnosis that you don't really remember calling, which implies you remember just about all the others, which is amazing to me. What is your proudest moment, do you think?
I don't know if it's proudest for me, but it's the proudest I was ever to be around hockey. And that Jonathan Toews would have been there. Patrick Kane would have been there. It was the gold medal game in Vancouver in 2010. And here's why. I think the best part of our game is when you can't leave the arena because the outcome is in doubt. And the gold medal game between the U.S. and Canada had the best North American players available playing in it. And it was the best of our sport because the outcome was in doubt. It was a one-goal game going into the final minute. Ryan Miller, the U.S. goaltender, was pulled for an extra attacker, and out of a netmouth scramble, Zach Parise from the U.S. scored, forcing overtime. And so as the Zamboni went back and forth in the intermission before the overtime started, everyone's wondering who's going to score the winning goals. It turned out it was Sidney Crosby for Canada, and Canada won the gold medal. We had 27 million viewers in the United States for that game, which was a record, and we had never... And you have to assume that many of the 27 million were not regular viewers of hockey. After the game was over and before the medals were presented, there were interviews done with Crosby and with the losing goaltender Miller. And they both spoke so eloquently about being in the Olympic competition, about what the game was like, and spoke so positively about all of that, their teammates, the other team, that it was the right thing to have on the air for people that may not have seen our game very often, or if they did, they only saw it once every 4 years. And I thought to have a record number of people watching that game with all of the elements that were presented, plus the two spokesmen for the game at the end, made me very proud to be a hockey guy.
Well, you just said our game, and the way you talk about hockey, I mean, it's in your heart, it's in your blood. It is clear you have a love affair with hockey, but hockey, I would argue, has a love affair with Doc Emmerich as well. I'm curious about how it was to broadcast during a pandemic, and most of all, with my fingers crossed, I'll ask you about the Chicago Blackhawks this coming season. And of course, you're talking to Steve Dale, so I've got to ask you about your Chapter 10, I believe it is. All of that with the great Doc Emmerich when we come back on WGN. Steve Dale on WGN talking with the great Doc Emmerich. Phone number, if you want to be a part of the conversation, I want you to be a part of the conversation. You can text or call 312-981-7200. And I feel right at home right now because Doc Emmerich is on the phone. Doc Emmerich, Chicago Blackhawks, this coming season. I hold my breath as I ask you, what do you think about that?
Patience. It is what I've been saying.
No, that's not what I
want
to hear. No, no.
No, I know. Nobody does. It's what I've been saying around here in this part of Michigan near Detroit for the last 5 years. You see, they had 25 years in a row of making the playoffs, and they had four championships in there. And for the last 4 or 5 years, they've had to really bite the bullet and be patient. And patience is hard when you've had that excellence and you've been spoiled by it over all those years. It is a cycle that we go through in sports, and the Blackhawks are on a very hard cycle right now. And they have already stated that this is going to be hard ahead. I hope that there are going to be some more changes made to the lineup before they get going, whenever that is going to be next year, because it's a lineup that I think still needs to be made more credible, in my opinion. But whether it will be or not, I don't know. I know they have made the statement to the fans that we're going to be young, and that is something that the New York Rangers did 3 years ago just to let the fans know that this is going to be a test. They were picked to be last in the Central Division a year ago, and they're probably going to be forecast to be last in the Central again this year. But they did have a fun playoff run and eliminated Edmonton before getting knocked out in the first round, official round of the playoffs. But it's whether the Blackhawk fans are up for patience, I don't know, but they're going to have it.
Well, I think we will be. I mean, it's a very dedicated fan base, and a fan base that wonders this according to several texts. What is the season going to look like? I mean, I think people mean, when does it begin, and how is it going to work? I mean, I don't know the answer to that. Do you have any inkling?
No, none of us have an answer right now, because the puck is being held by COVID-19. And when it is dropped is going to be up to the virus, and it's going to be up to a number of factors. The fact that we had a playoff and that the Stanley Cup was awarded, and we had 33,000 out of 33,000 perfect COVID tests, is a tribute to the players and to the league, and to the league and the Players Association working together.
Yes.
They are going to do that again whenever we start, and I know their target date has been the 1st of January. But that's a target. The ultimate decision on when that is going to take place, that's up to the whims of a virus that has decimated us ever since the middle of March. And that last game that I had, that I was able to work alongside another announcer named Olchek,
yes,
and across the ice from a guy named Boucher, was at United Center with San Jose and the Blackhawks.
Hmm.
And it was a long time ago.
Yeah, it seems like forever ago right now, perhaps. So is this just me, Doc? I saw your call of this year's unique Stanley Cup without any fans in the crowd. And Stanley Cup comes out. I'm talking about the Stanley Cup itself. And no matter what I do. I try not to cry, but I do. What is it about the Stanley Cup that is so different? I mean, when a Major League Baseball team wins the World Series, hopefully it's the Cubs or the White Sox every time out, though it may not be. I don't cry, even. I mean, what is it about the Stanley Cup?
Well, part of it is that it was first awarded in the 1890s, before the NHL was even formed. And then in the early 1900s, they started etching the names of the players on it. And when you get the name that your parents gave you engraved on a trophy, that makes it something else special. And I think the fact that it is so shined up and so glittering and so distinctive in its shape with the bowl on the top adds to it as well. I think the other thing too, Steve, and this is the part that, you know, these are professionals that knock themselves out, and never did they sacrifice more. And that's a hard thing to say, really, because they all get beat up every other night for 8 weeks, and this year it was 10, to win this thing, or to get to the last game and lose it like Dallas did. But to do that after they have been paid very well during the regular season. But it's never really discussed how little they make going after this trophy, because it everybody gets paid the same amount, and it's not really very much.
How much?
I'll never forget. John Davidson was competing for the Stanley Cup in 1979, the goaltender for the Rangers. Now he's president of the Rangers. And they won the first game against the Montreal Canadiens, but the Canadiens were going to win again for the fourth time in 4 years in 1979. They won the next four games. Now it's a couple weeks later, and John's at home, and the Rangers have had a good season. They just didn't win the championship. And the mail comes to the front door, and he's rifling through the various letters, and there's one that's got a letterhead on it from the NHL. I wonder what they want. He opens the envelope, and he realizes it's its playoff share. It's a check. And he did a double take, and he said, "I forgot we got paid."
Huh.
That's what this is about.
Doc, how much do they get paid? Do you happen to know?
This year they doubled the share because of all of the, so I don't know the exact amount. I think it was in the neighborhood, because in previous years it was around $150 if you won, and that was for 8 weeks work. So that would be in the high teens per week of thousands. So around $150,000 in previous years. So if they did double it, I'm only guessing out loud that the player's share would be around $300,000 for 10 weeks work. Now you figure that the average salary is in the neighborhood of between $2 and $3 million. So you see what the difference is, but it's never talked about. And that's why I don't have the exact figure. It's not talked about because that's not the reason they play like that.
Well, that's hockey.
The reason they play is to get a ring they can't wear, and they get their name on a trophy that they can't keep.
I've seen,
but they never complain about it.
Bobby Hull walks around town wearing that ring, by the way. Bob, you have a great question for Doc Emmerich. Welcome to the program, Bob.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. You know, one of the things, Doc, I always enjoyed in your broadcasts over the years listening to you was you telling the backstory or the history of various players, you know, the colleges for which they played, or the minor league teams, how last year they might have been in the ECHL, and then all of a sudden they're up with the NHL. It just, I think maybe that has something to do with your having a doctorate. I, too, am a Bowling Green graduate. I don't know when it was you were there, but, you know, just that background of school and education was really great to hear about the various players. And I just commend you for that. It was always great to listen to you anyway, but the backstories were all the more enjoyable.
Thank you so much. What year did you go there?
I was there doing graduate work from 1979 through 1981, so I wondered when it was you were there.
I started work in 71, was there for coursework until 73, and then actually finished the dissertation in 76. So we were there. Did you go to the Ice House to watch hockey?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, one of my roles in my graduate degree was to assist with the hockey band. And I will never forget the night that there was a game being played at the arena. And the U.S. team beat the Russians, and it was announced by Tom Glick, the PA announcer from the Ice House, and I mean, the place just went absolutely crazy. It was just nuts, and it was a great memory. Yeah. And of course, I always loved hearing when you would talk about George McPhee or Morrow. I'm drawing a blank on his first name at the moment, but anyway, those guys were playing at Bowling Green when I was there, so it was a great experience.
Bob, you've got to pick up the book called Off Mic, because there's more in it in the book. I think you guys can sing the theme song together now from Bowling Green if they had one. How do you do
Well, they do. It's called Forward Falcons.
Can you
and
sing
I'm
it?
I'm sure that Doc
I
remembers
hear it.
Freddie Falcon and Frida Falcon. Yeah. And I always love
Isaac Zumba, Zumba, Zumba. Isaac Zumba,
yeah.
Zumba, Zay.
There you go.
Keep going.
Isaac Zumba. Good, good for you, Mike. Holy cow. Holy cow. So what is retirement? What's retirement going to mean for you?
I don't know yet because, I announced retirement one day and then launched a book the next, and so it winds up being very busy for a period of time. I think I'll have a better grasp of it sometime after the new year.
Well, but, I'm going to hope that if you do a book tour.
My wife and I are committed to animal causes, and so we're going to wind up doing an awful lot, I think, in that regard. And so Steve will probably be passing that information along to you sometime in the future.
Well, I will. Bob, we're up against news. We've got to run, but thank you. Great call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doc, for great broadcasting. And, you know, we have a lot of people loved what you did. So thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. Zumba, Zumba, Zumba. We didn't get to it really here. Can you give me only 30 seconds? Really, that's all I have on Chapter 10.
Chapter 10 pertains to animals and how important that they are in the lives of people, and particularly in the lives of my wife and myself, and how even though they may not have lives as long as humans, they can be hugely important to the lives of humans, and that's why we try to care for them the best that we possibly can. Just like Mr. Dale, every Sunday morning, 5:30 Central on WGN Chicago.
I want to clip that out and use that as a promo tag coming from Doc Emmerich. Doc, seriously, you know from the bottom of my heart, you're the best not only at broadcasting games, but one of the best people that I know, seriously. It's been an honor to get to know you. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. And the news is next at 2 o'clock.
almost. Hold on, Doc. Hold on. Wait, just one moment here. So John O'Hurley comes up after 2 o'clock, and now I say the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. On what station, Doc?
WGN 720 Chicago.
We did it!